Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Our friend John Shelton Reed is back in Chapel Hill after a lot of traveling around, after stints, particularly at the University of Mississippi down in Oxford, and then more recently at the University of South Carolina in Columbia. He's been down there doing what he's been doing for us for more than 40 years or so, telling us what it means, or different ways to look and try to come up with answers to the question of what it means to be Southern and what the South is, what's special and different about our region. He's been teaching us that. I assume he's been down at Mississippi and South Carolina talking about those same things. But I'm interested in what he learned from them. And so, John Shelton Reed, thanks for coming back to Chapel Hill, and thanks for talking to us.
Always a pleasure to be here, D.G. And actually, you might add, since I retired 5 years ago, I've also taught at East Tennessee State in Johnson City and Center College in Danville, Kentucky, and University of London, though that's a different matter.
But a different part of the South.
Yeah, that's right. I've been getting around to parts of the region that I enjoy and spending a...
And you're getting ready to go to England again, I think.
Going to England for a couple of months, yeah. And then in the fall, I'll be at LSU in Baton Rouge, which is certainly a different part.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what Southern states you haven't touched, Georgia and Alabama, I guess. But you've been in those states enough so that you can't. Well, we talk about the South and whether or not the South is different. And then here in Chapel Hill, we really think Chapel Hill is different and special. You've got a new way to look at Chapel Hill, having recently been in two other university, state, flagship university towns. And did you learn anything, or are they all the same?
Oh, they're certainly not all the same. No, you're quite right. Everybody who thinks Chapel Hill is special is quite right about that. But, of course, every place is special. I mean, that's people talk about the Southern sense of place, and I think what that comes down to is appreciating the differences between places, and there are plenty of them, fast food chains and Walmart notwithstanding. Oxford, Mississippi is a charming town. It's quite different.
What are the there are a lot of connections between Oxford and Chapel Hill, although I would say that most people who live in Chapel Hill haven't been to Oxford. And what were And of course, you've been there before. There are conferences and so it wasn't a brand new kind of thing. But for the first-time visitor to Oxford, what are going to be the things that remind them of Chapel Hill other than the fast food franchises? Right. And what are the things that strike out as differences?
You know, at a first approximation, you could say that Oxford's like Chapel Hill was 35 years ago. I mean, it's basically a university town, and there's not much else there. And that's both good and bad, you know. It's but certainly you don't have the same kind of sprawl that we've got here, where you're not part of a metropolitan area, you know. And on the other hand, Columbia, the other place where I spent a term, is much more of a city setting than Chapel Hill is so far. You know, we may be getting there, wall to wall urbanization in the triangle, but Oxford is a town of at most 15,000-20,000 people and 10,000-12,000 students, something like that. About like Chapel Hill was when I first got to know it in the early 60s.
So if you plop somebody down from the 1960s, a resident of Chapel Hill in the 1960s, and brought them back like Rip Van Winkle, plopped them down in Oxford, you think they might feel more comfortable in Oxford than they might in the Chapel Hill of today?
I'm sure that's so. I mean, it's a university town. They've got a good bookstore like we used to have, the Intimate, you know, the big downtown bookstore, Square Books. It's one of the world's great bookstores right there in a little Mississippi town. And life of the town centers around the university, football weekends and party weekends, and they're starting to get some people moving there in retirement, and they're starting to get problems of sprawl and whatnot. But Dale and I, my wife and I, you know, kept showing up early for parties because we'd leave and give ourselves 10 minutes to get there, and it doesn't take more than 5 minutes to get any place in Oxford. So we'd be driving around the block, you know, we wouldn't be early. But this happened over and over again. It's still a small town, a charming one.
Let me ask you about politics. And Chapel Hill has a reputation of being a liberal university. Somebody said it's a pad of butter in a sea of grits or something, something like that. And more different in terms of outlook than its surroundings and the rest of a state which is moderately conservative, I guess you'd say. And Mississippi has a reputation of being not moderately conservative, but just
extremely
conservative. Yeah. And how does the university fit into that? Is it a conservative university in a conservative state, or does it, like Chapel Hill, kind of stand out and draw the snide comments?
Yeah. I don't think it's ever had the reputation as a bastion of liberalism or left wing thought or however you want to describe it that Chapel Hill did and does. I think Chapel Hill's reputation obviously is somewhat exaggerated and. Mississippi's perhaps underestimated because there are a lot of folks there, but the center of gravity at Ole Miss is I think somewhat to the right of what it is here. It's not. James Silver in the '60s wrote this book called Mississippi, the Closed Society, and it was dangerous to think for yourself at one time in Mississippi. That's not true anymore, and you do have these great bookstores, and you do have the Center for the Study of the American South, which is a vigorous enterprise with all sorts of things going on, and a very healthy, I think, certainly biracial, at least biracial view of what the South's about and where it's going.
What about athletics? Were you down there during the time?
No,
you weren't there during football season.
No, so. Well, I wasn't there in football season, but Manning had gone, so they weren't winning reliably when I was there. But it's still a big deal. I mean, football is to Ole Miss what basketball is to Chapel Hill, and we lived, Dale and I, we had an apartment in a condominium complex with maybe 120 units. And on the weekday, there'd be at most 20 people there. A lot of these people had bought condominiums to use five or six weekends a year. On a football weekend, they had a bus running from our condo complex to the stadium. People would come in on Friday night and party all Friday night and go to the game on Saturday and maybe stay over Saturday, go home on Sunday. It's a big deal.
Well, it's interesting to me because I've always wondered why something like that hadn't developed in Chapel Hill, and maybe it's just because of the high prices.
Although prices are going up fast in Oxford, and there's certainly a lot of new condos going in on Rosemary Street that I don't know who they're going to sell them to. It could be basketball.
For yeah, maybe so. Well, the athletics and the kind of political viewpoint of the University of Mississippi, but primarily, I guess, if you had to pick the most conservative state in the Union, Mississippi would be in the top five. There wouldn't be any question
about
that.
Right up there with Utah. Yeah.
With Utah. And somebody told me once that South Carolina, that white South Carolina was even more conservative than Utah. And maybe Mississippi would be the same. Yeah. But there, and particularly with respect to race, if you pulled out a state that you would be asked to say, what is the most historically the most racist state in the nation, Mississippi would be up there in the top two or three.
It certainly has been the most depressive.
Yeah. And when I was growing up, when you were growing up, these athletics, football games and the basketball games, you wouldn't see a black guy in the South playing on athletic teams. And now, this is the image that I have of, and maybe it doesn't happen anymore, but you've got the Mississippi rolling out for the football game with big rebel flags and the Confederate soldier. And then you've got these great black athletes holding up being the key to victory when it comes for.
The chancellor and the coach, incidentally, down there have done their best to do away with the Confederate flag waving. They've, the band is no longer carrying it. They've introduced this thing called the Battle M flag, which they are trying to promote, which is the letter M. It's on a red background. It's a blue letter M with white stars on it. So if you wave it real fast, you can't, it looks kind of, but it's an uphill fight. The alumni are attached to the Confederate battle flag as the symbol of the university. I mean, because it has been for a long time, and Colonel Rebel is the mascot.
And is Colonel Rebel still, he's still the mascot?
Although there was a proposal to do away with him as well.
It's interesting to me, does the sentiment for this come from a resentment within the black student body or black faculty, or is this sort of preventive action taken by sensitive white people in there?
I think it's the latter. Well, not exactly the latter. The football coach basically says he wants to get rid of it because it makes it harder to recruit athletes in the first place. So, I mean, the ones that are there don't seem to mind it too much, but who knows who's not there because they do mind
it. I see. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
I think if you put it to the vote of the faculty, well, they're university faculty, so they'd vote to change it. Put it to a vote of the students, probably not. Put it to the vote of the alumni, certainly
not. Definitely not. Yeah. Even though this is such an interesting dynamic, because the football coach who generally must have the support of the alumni to survive, and the alumni wants nothing more than victory. I mean,
That's clearly right.
Because they broke open their segregationist viewpoints to have black athletes so they could have victory. But when the football coach comes and says, guys, I know how you feel about this, but this is hurting me in recruiting the very best people that we need to win, and the alumni is just torn apart because it's conflicting.
Yeah, that's an argument that carries some weight, I suspect, with alumni. You had the same dynamic when you had the referendum on the state flag. You know, the Mississippi state flag's got the Confederate battle flag as part of it, and 4 or 5 years ago they had a referendum on changing that, and you had this strange alliance of sort of NAACP and Country Club Republicans on the one side that wanted to change it, and the reason the Country Club Republicans thought it was bad for business. And the pro-change campaign was funded by business interests. It was unsuccessful. I mean, they voted 2-1 to keep it, and it wasn't entirely along racial lines. I mean, there were a good many whites who voted to change it, and something nobody's ever satisfactorily explained to me is there were a good many blacks who voted to keep the old one. So,
Well, we need to take a break, but before we do, what is the speculation? I mean, somebody must have guessed about why they.
Well, I've speculated about it.
What is your speculation?
Nobody actually talked to these folks, but they did talk to a few people who chose not to vote. And what they basically said was, you know, we've got more important problems than what the state flag is. And they didn't like the NAACP telling them how to vote. And there's a streak of
independent streak that runs through biracially
black
through
and white. Yeah, that's right.
Well, we're talking to John Shelton Reed, who has returned from recent visits to universities in Mississippi and South Carolina, and we're getting him to talk about those visits, what he found there, and how it sort of shines a light on how things are in Chapel Hill. He and I will be right back.
Performance Subaru in Chapel Hill is proud to offer you exciting prices and many in-stock Subarus. Subaru is the only vehicle that can climb a mountain in the snow and still look classy pulling up to your favorite ritzy restaurant for a romantic dinner. Performance Subaru has value-priced all Subarus, so now's the time to buy. 2005 Legacy sedans have been value-priced at $3,822 below MSRP. 2005 Legacy wagons have been value-priced at $3,413 below MSRP. If it's monthly payments you're interested in, how about a 2006 Impreza sedan for just $199 per month, or a 2006 B9 Tribeca for $299 per month? The B9 Tribeca has a 5-star government crash safety rating and better fuel economy than 59 other SUVs with a whopping 250 horsepower. Visit PerformanceAutoMall.com for a full listing of Subaru inventory. Performance can't be beat. Subaru. Think. Feel. Drive. All prices plus tax, tag, and $398 doc fee. Impreza, 48-month lease, 12,000 miles per year. Zero due at signing. Tribeca, 36-month lease, 12,000 miles per year. $28.93 due at signing. Offer ends January 31st, 2006.
This is Officer Danny Lloyd of the Chapel Hill Police Department. Chapel Hill has long been a community that encourages citizens that are able to consider walking or cycling as a healthy alternative to driving. Recently, however, there have been a number of traffic accidents involving pedestrians and cyclists that show a need for more attention to safety by all of us that use our roadways. Please consider the following suggestions. Pedestrians should only cross the street at intersections or marked crosswalks and should look both ways before stepping into the street. obey crosswalk signals, or cross with the traffic signals when present. Motorists should always obey all traffic laws, especially the speed limit, stop lights, and stop signs. Additionally, motorists should avoid potential distractions like cell phones when the car is in motion. Cyclists should always wear a helmet and avoid traveling after dark or on busy roads if possible. Finally, remember to share the road. Thanks, WCHL, for caring about traffic safety in Chapel Hill.
Who's Talking with D.G. Martin can be heard once again Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with John Shelton Reed. I come to visit with you, John Shelton Reed, whenever I get a whole series of questions about the South and what it means to be a Southerner and, you know, all these unanswerable imponderables that we love to talk about. But you've been helping me by focusing on your experience at two universities, the University of Mississippi, and later on we'll talk about your visit to the University of South Carolina. These were not just a pass-through visits. You went and spent a semester teaching there.
Semester at each, right.
What was your classroom experience like at the University of Mississippi?
Well, it was not representative, for starters. I people ask me about, you know, Ole Miss students, and I can't really tell them because I taught a graduate seminar at the Center for the Study of the American South, and I had 14 graduate
students. Great students.
fabulous students. I mean, people that go to do a master's degree in Southern Studies at Ole Miss are not doing it because they think it's going to get them a job. You know, they're doing it because they're really interested in the subject. So, I mean, I had fabulous students and great papers, and I'm still in touch with some of these kids. My impression of the undergraduates, and I had more experience with undergraduates at South Carolina, my impression is that the kinds of things that sort of mildly annoyed me at Chapel Hill would drive me nuts if I actually taught it at one of those places.
At one of those places. I do want to talk about that some more, but I'm real interested in the Center for the Study of the American South in Oxford.
Excuse me, I said it wrong. It's the Center for the Study of Southern Culture.
We got the Center for the Study of the American South. And there are a number of sort of crossover links in the sense that Billy Ferris was at Ole Miss and is now at Chapel Hill.
That's right.
And what is the difference? And you've been associated with the Chapel Hill.
Right. We in Chapel Hill are sort of Johnny-come-latelys to this enterprise. I mean, the center at Ole Miss was started, I think, in the early 70s. And Bill Ferris was the director for a good many years. I was on their board. We started ours in the 90s, and it really only got underway in the last 4 or 5 years in a serious way. I mean, we were approved to have a center and given permission to try to raise money, so we printed. We were a letterhead. That was basically what we were.
What's the difference sort of in focus and objectives, if any?
Well, there is a difference, you know, and I think it's a good thing there is. Otherwise, there wouldn't be much reason for us to do it since it's already being done. The Ole Miss Center quite naturally has much more of a Deep South kind of focus. A number of people there, including Bill Ferris, are interested, when he was there, interested in the blues. There's a lot about sort of plantation life and that sort of thing. We're more an Upper South focus in textile mills and tobacco farming and country music rather than the blues. I mean,
post-Civil War interest, is it right down along that line?
Not entirely, mm-hmm. but I think it's kind of like the differences between North Carolina and Mississippi. I mean, it's different versions of the South. You know, I'm not saying our people are not interested in the civil rights movement, but, you know, certainly that's central to understanding the South if you're in Mississippi. If you look at the books that have come out from the two universities, one of the ones from here is Jackie Hall and Bob Korstad and their colleagues on Like a Family, the study of textile mill villages. Well, they don't have a lot of textile mill villages in Mississippi. I mean, that's a Piedmont kind of thing. So I don't mean to exaggerate this, but there's just a sort of division of labor there, which I think makes a lot of sense. We have amazingly good holdings on country music in the Southern Folk Life collection here. They have the blues archive down there, including B.B. King's holdings. So it's just I like to talk, sort of annoys everybody, about the Oxford-Chapel Hill axis, you know.
it is an alliance rather than a competitive.
That's what I'd like it to be, because otherwise there's not much. Otherwise we're operating from a distinct disadvantage. They have the momentum and the track record, and we're just finding our feet. So if we don't do something different, there's not much point in our doing anything.
And what did you find with circling back to your experience teaching? What did you find that your graduate students at Mississippi, who are interested in the South and its history and culture, what kinds of things were they exploring?
D.G., they came from, you know, all over the board. Some of them were interested in music. Some of them were interested in politics. Some of them were interested in race relations. Some of them were interested in food. I mean, this is down at Ole Miss, they have something called, it's the headquarters, something called the Southern Foodways Alliance. A fellow named John T. Edge, who you should have on your show if he ever comes to town. It's an organization, a lot of members around here, incidentally, restaurateurs, chefs, cookbook writers, food writers, a few hangers-on like me, interested in Southern food. And I had a couple of students who were working on that. The nice thing about these graduate students is they come to the program with interests. I mean, they don't show up and say...
They bring you something.
That's
right. I mean, so you... What were some of the good things that you learned from them that you didn't know before?
Oh, geez. Well, I had one student who was very interested in the rise of Southern Republicanism, a phenomenon I'd noticed.
That has surrounded you a lonely Republican. Yeah. Now you're the majority.
You know? Right. But, I didn't really know much about it. I certainly didn't know much about it in the Deep South. And Clark Reed, who was the head of the Republican National Committee, is a Mississippian. This fellow was interviewing him.
So we're focusing on being able to talk to live people who had brought about, mostly live people who brought about this recent swing to a Republican South.
That was one of the papers. I had another fellow who was a great devotee of the writings of Willie Morris, Mississippian, who, as you know, was the editor of Harper's and then went back to Oxford and taught there and died recently. This fellow is eventually going to write a biography of Willie Morris. He wrote a term paper for me on some aspect of Morris's career, and Morris's widow lives in Jackson. There was that. I had people with literary interests. One woman working on Eudora Welty, also a Mississippian, also until recently right there, and still lots of her friends and relations around. It was just a little of this and a little of that. I taught my course, and we covered the topics I wanted to cover, but they came in with term paper topics, and they
worked. And so a lot of your work was working with them on earlier drafts of their work. Well, surrounded as you were by the literary figures that you've just mentioned and the memories of them, not to leave out William Faulkner, and having been surrounded by the literary presence of a fairly powerful literary community in Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. If you got stood up against the wall and said, where's the center of the literary South, what kind of diplomatic answer would you construct to keep from getting shot by one group or the other?
Well, I don't think anybody would argue that if you just want to go count heads, there are more around here than down there, although there are quite a few in the Oxford area. It's just not as big a place, and you start counting in Chapel Hill, you're going to include Hillsborough, you're going to include Raleigh, and you're going to include Durham, and all of a sudden you're up, well up in the double digits of published.
So we win the numbers game.
We certainly,
as far as current productive writers are concerned.
Certainly do. And, as for quality, it's not for me to say, but, both places have some good writers. One of the things I regret about my time in Oxford was that Barry Hanna, who I'm a big fan of Barry's, but he was actually teaching out in San Marcos, Texas, the semester I was in Oxford, so I didn't get to see much of Barry. But both of those are literary centers, and Fayetteville, Arkansas, is another one, and another university town where I haven't been but would like to spend some time. Interesting to me, and I don't exactly know why. It seems to me that outside the South, most of your writers are urban types. They're in New York or Chicago or something like that. I'm certain that we have more writers in Orange County than there are in Atlanta. And I don't know why that is, but tend to be in the South. I think writers are often in the vicinity of universities. Don't necessarily work for them, but they're nearby.
Well, that's so interesting, and we need to take a break. We're talking with John Shelton Reed, expert on the South and how to define it, and we're exploring with him his experiences in visiting the University of Mississippi and the University of South Carolina. We've been concentrating on the University of Mississippi. When we come back, we'll talk to him about his visit to Columbia.
Now, here's news about the availability of high-quality professional office space at the campus on Vilcom Circle. A longtime tenant is moving away, and for the first time in a long time, you will find wonderful space in McClamrock Hall for your offices, up to 4,000 square feet. McClamrock Hall is the headquarters for Vilcom, owner of this Chapel Hill landmark building. McClamrock Hall offers free parking virtually at the door for staff and visitors, and is right across the street from a post office, restaurants, theaters, and shopping. You may occupy all or a portion of the space, and it can be configured to your need. This is an unusual vacancy that may not last long. If you are looking for more space or want to upgrade your offices, look now to McClamrock Hall and the campus on Vilcom Circle. Call Christy Jones at 968-4811. That's Christy Jones at 968-4811. Let us show you what is available and why we love working in McClamrock Hall at the campus on Vilcom Circle.
Hi, Ron. It's Jim.
Hey, Jim. Word has it that you're selling an amazing steak dinner.
Ron, I have the best steak deal in the South for only $12.99. A thick-cut, mesquite smoked ribeye steak, baked potato, fresh fried onion ring, and you get a salad, too, only $12.99. Incredible, but truly the best steak deal in the South.
Jim's Famous Barbecue is here for your dine-in, take-out, and catering needs. Visit Jim's Famous Barbecue today, located in the Village Plaza Shopping Center on Elliott Road.
You can hear D.G. Martin with a replay of Who's Talking from the whole week, Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360, WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. John Sheldon Reed and I are talking about his recent visits to universities like the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, but not that much like them. One, the University of Mississippi at Oxford, and the other, the University of South Carolina at Columbia. Let's talk about your recent visit to the University of South Carolina.
Yeah, I just got back just before Christmas. For starters, I really liked Columbia. I'd just been there to meetings and never really spent any time in the town, generally inside the motel down in the lounge, something like that. But been on the campus a few times. But Columbia is a nice, livable town. It's it may not be much of a place to visit, but it's a good place to live.
And why is that? Why would you say it's a big southern town?
Kind of middle sized southern town. Uh-huh. It's small enough that you can get it in your head all at once. It doesn't take too long to learn your way around. It's got interesting architecture. It's got good food. It's got good music. It's the university is right smack in the middle of town, and so there's a lot.
You got to help me with this, but just to put it in context, because of Fort Jackson and because the university is in the capital city, mm-hmm. you'd have to imagine that Chapel Hill would be incorporated into Raleigh and to Fort Bragg.
Something like that.
And that would be complicated. That would be to me, the dynamics of all of this shifting stuff, plus Columbia is
there's some industry there. So,
yeah, it's a center. It's a center of not the primary center of commerce, but it is.
Yeah. No, I actually had grown up in Kingsport, Tennessee, as I did. That's an Eastman Kodak Company town. Tennessee Eastman was the big employer where I came from, and you've got Carolina Eastman down in Columbia.
Oh, well, so you felt at home.
Well, actually, a few kids I went to high school with, you know, spent their careers working for Eastman in Columbia. I was sitting waiting in line. My wife and I were waiting in line for a flu shot at pharmacy out in West Columbia and ran into a guy we knew in high school and hadn't seen for 30 years. But he recognized us. I wouldn't have recognized him. But, it's a beautiful site. It's on hills over the confluence of two rivers, and the rivers these days are very much accessible. You can go down and sit on the rocks in the rivers and watch the water come by and, you know, put your feet up. We didn't discover it until the weather turned sort of cold, so we didn't do all that much of it. But if I ever go back, I'll do more. We were housed on the edge of campus, so I could walk to my classroom, and we could walk two blocks in the other direction and be at Five Points, which is this area with a lot of restaurants and shops and sort of the Greenwich Village of...
you're talking like you kind of fell in love with the University of South Carolina. And if you had your choice starting your career over again, is that a place you'd like to spend your life?
No. No, I mean, really, given what I've done and the kind of things I do, there's no place better than Chapel Hill. The university is just... our library resources and the people to talk to, it's just unsurpassed, unequaled, really. But I did like the town of Oxford, Mississippi, and I liked the town of Columbia, and I could live pretty happily in either one of those places. Dale and I were walking around Oxford one afternoon, and, you know, one or the other of us said, we could live here, and...
You had to admit it.
Yeah.
It's kind of disloyal to say, I like these other places. It's sort of like you have to look your wife in the eye and say, I have to admit to you, that's a good-looking person over there.
Yeah. Well, what's really disloyal is what I said next, which is I'm not sure I could stand to watch another town get ruined.
Oh, well.
Because, I've been here since 69, and Dale was at Duke in the early 60s, and I kind of liked Chapel Hill better when it was smaller and more southern. And Oxford is smaller and more southern, but it's not going to stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming a retirement destination. It's starting to sprawl. The mayor of Oxford is the guy that owns this bookstore I was talking about, Richard Holworth, and he's aware that there's a problem, and they're trying to do their best to sort of control and contain growth and make sure it proceeds along.
Well, you're starting to sound... Like what you're not, at least politically, and that is having the government come in and start telling people where they ought to build. I don't know whether that would sell in the mountains of Tennessee.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't. I don't have all that much trouble with municipal government. in any case, Oxford, I'm afraid, is going to have sprawl and traffic jams. And
Focusing back on Columbia, Columbia doesn't have that problem because it already is a city.
It is, and oddly enough, we were struck. My Columbia friends would laugh at me if they heard me say it, but we were struck with the absence of things like traffic jams. I mean, yeah, they have them at rush hour if you're in the wrong place. But, where we were, we were right downtown, but we didn't have that problem.
Mm-hmm.
We could get anywhere we wanted pretty easily and most any time of day.
Well, before we leave the comparisons between the university towns, did you learn anything that you would – kind of have on your mind that you would say to the people, and if there were somebody in Chapel Hill who could, by fiat, make things different,
mm-hmm.
is there something that much better in Columbia or that much better in Oxford that you could transfer to Chapel Hill to make Chapel Hill even better?
Oh, I don't know about that, DG. They've got different trajectories and different histories, and I'm concerned. Seems to me that both of those towns have somehow done a better job of protecting their neighborhoods. you know, I live downtown here in Chapel Hill, and we're constantly concerned about folks that buy up houses in our neighborhood and stuff them full of students who park five cars in the front yard. And, you know, I don't blame the kids. I mean, I was a student once myself. I blame the landlords, you know. You know, downtown Chapel Hill is very precarious, and I think it may be doomed. And I'm fixing to move to Carroll Woods or Carolina Meadows. And, you know, I hope I can sell while I still can. But I've seen other towns that are equally bad. Auburn, Alabama is one of them. I mean, it's singularly unpleasant in the, around the university.
Well, that's interesting. There is, it's not automatic that a university brings either bad or good to its surroundings. Mm-hmm. It involves something else, and maybe you can't teach us exactly what that is, but it alerts us to keep an eye out for it.
I think so.
Let's take a quick break. Talking to John Shelton Reed, we've been talking about his experiences at the University of Mississippi and the University of South Carolina. And when we come back, I'm going to barrage him with some questions that, like I usually do, about what it means to be Southern. He and I'll be right back.
You've been noticing the signs for a while. Roughness, wrinkling, irregular pigmentation, or inelasticity. These are all normal changes in our skin as we age. This is Dr. Lori Etter of Central Dermatology. As we grow older, our skin doesn't produce new cells at the same pace. Here are several tips to enhance skin care as you grow older. Use skincare products that nourish your skin cells, such as creams and lotions with ingredients like vitamin B complex, copper, and flax oil. If you smoke, stop. Ask your doctor or skincare specialist about other topical products that can help maintain and protect your skin's health.
For medical or cosmetic questions about your skin, call Central Dermatology Center at 401-1994 or click on www.cdcskin.com. Central Dermatology is located on Highway 54 near the I-40 exchange. Central Dermatology, protecting what protects you. WCHL 1360. Time now for Biography for Radio with Jack Perkins. Brought to you locally by the Cedars and East-West Partners community.
He walked the roads of Kentucky dreaming of making it big. Then he got news of the gold rush. His story next on Biography for Radio.
Hey, Coach Jimmy Johnson, what are you doing at Sam's Club?
Stocking up for my big game party. I got this 50-inch high-definition plasma TV, Buffalo hot wings, party trays, and 10 bags of Tostitos.
Tostitos? I'm going long. Throw me a bag.
I don't think so.
Aisle 15, I'm open.
Somebody get a stretcher. That's got to hurt.
Sam's Club. Everything you need for great big game memories is here. So stock up and save big on great food items, electronics, and more. 10% service fee applies to all non-member purchases.
The young German immigrant sold cloth and buttons in Kentucky from a pack on his back. When the gold rush started, he headed west, taking along canvas, silk, and cotton from his brother's New York store. Once off the boat in San Francisco, he cut up his canvas and made it into sturdy pants for the prospectors. They sold well. Soon he opened up a store. One of his customers was a tailor in Nevada. The tailor kept getting complaints from one drunken prospector that the gold nuggets ripped his pockets. The tailor added metal rivets at the corners and realized he struck gold himself. He contacted the San Francisco store owner and they patented the idea. In 1873, the first pair of blue denim pants made with metal rivets appeared. Known as waist overalls, they sold for 22 cents each. Later nicknamed jeans, they became a symbol of the West's rugged individualism. Not only miners liked them, but workmen, cowboys, and eventually every fashion-conscious teenager in the world, thanks to the founder of America's best-known jeans maker, Levi Strauss. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D.
Biography for Radio, brought to you on WCHL by The Cedars of Chapel Hill and East West Partners Community. The Cedars is the country's premier retirement community. Call 929-1995 to find out more on this very special community. Life has been good to you. Now it gets even better at The Cedars of Chapel Hill.
Who's Talking with D.G. Martin can be heard once again Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I've been visiting with John Shelton Reed about his visits to the University of Mississippi and the University of South Carolina. I learned a lot about how those university towns affected him and how charmed he was with those towns. Chapel Hill's not perfect, but it's a great place to live, as he ultimately confesses.
Oh, yeah. I'm not leaving.
One of the great reasons for being around here is we are surrounded by people who are thinking about these things that interest us, mm-hmm. about what the South is. You've recently written a review of Hal Crowther's book, Gather at the River.
I have. It hasn't appeared yet, but...
It'll be... Hal's book is a book of essays that he's written, which weave around this question of what the South is and what people who talk about what the South is, how they think about it. And of course, big news is that Hal's book has just been selected as one of the five or six candidates in the category of criticism for the National Book Critics Award, which is phenomenal. I think it's the only North Carolina book of any category.
Well deserved. I didn't know that.
Well, now that you've carefully read and reviewed, is this a fair question? How does Hal Crowther view the South, and how is it different from your view?
Differ all that much, and in one of his essays in there, he talks about Southern identity and basically suggests that it hinges on a sense of grievance about how other people see the South, or at least it's brought out by that.
I'll interrupt you because I was moved by that essay, and I can't quote him, but he just basically said that as long as it, just to put it in context, North Carolina, as long as the Yankees were complaining about Jesse Helms, we were going to keep on electing him.
That's right.
and if they complaining about our rebel flags and all of these other things, that we were going to keep chewing tobacco long as that happened.
Now, there's a great British adverbial phrase, bloody-minded, and I think there's a lot of bloody-mindedness in the South. You know, don't push us.
You know, it sounds kind of silly, but you think he's on to something.
Yeah, I do. I wrote one time that, you know, there wouldn't be a South if there weren't a North. you know, and Sheldon Hackney, historian who was Bill Ferris's predecessor, director of the NEH, wrote a book about the South as a counterculture. Basically, said that there's a sense of grievance at the heart of Southern identity, a sense that you've been mistreated somehow as a Southern. I don't think our sense of grievances in the big leagues as group grievances go, but there is this mild annoyance.
Is this description of the South the description of the white South?
Yeah, he's talking about the white South, although you get the same kind of stuff these days from black Southerners who are annoyed about the way their cousins in Detroit talk about how backward and provincial Southern black folks are. So I think it's a biracial thing increasingly.
Well, you studied this whole question analytically and kind of subjectively in both respects, trying to find devices to measure it. As I remember, you know, you'll look at the phone book and find out how many in different parts of the country and find out what percentage of businesses are called Dixie versus American.
That sort of thing, yeah.
And that kind of thing. Started me thinking, and this is particularly true, your colleague on the Carolina faculty, Professor Andrews' book, has edited a book and then written a wonderful introductory essay about the African-American writers in North Carolina. Phenomenal kind of story. He tries to explain why North Carolina was sort of the center of African American literature in the 19th century and early 20th century. Then John Hope Franklin's book has come out, and it's hit me hard in terms of reliving his experience. I mean, and so here's the question that comes up to me, because I've just been hit by these African American perspectives, and that is, I mean, isn't the South really defined because we're the only part of the country that really had a strong slave culture, that until the Civil War, we defined ourselves by defending a slave system and then implementing it, mm-hmm. and that we're still, it's not place, it's not a sense of family, it's not all these things, it's that we, this is a question mark now. Have you had that question a thousand times?
I have, and you know, that's certainly been part of it and an important part. I resist folks who want to say that that's all it was. If you go back to the 1920s, a historian named Ulrich Phillips, who was himself a segregationist, white supremacist Georgian, said that the central theme of Southern history and the cardinal test of a Southerner, and he meant white Southerner, is the commitment that the South shall be and remain a white man's country. You know, everything, he said, everything about the South hinges on this commitment to white supremacy. Somebody from East Tennessee, you know, not too sure about that, because, you know, I grew up in a county that was about 2% black. I'm far more black folks around me when I went to college in Boston than there were when I was growing up in East Tennessee. And yet that part of the South, the Mountain South, where the black population is minuscule, is in many ways
fervently Southern.
Southern, yeah. And so that's not all there is to it. Certainly one version of the South, an important part of the South, the South's history and its culture does come from this history unpleasant history of race relations, but there are other differences too, and I think increasingly, perhaps at least relatively, religious differences are important. The South is the one part, not just of the United States, but of the world, where groups like the Baptist, Methodist, Low Church, Evangelical Protestant groups are the dominant religions. You know,
and growing and strong.
Oh, absolutely flourishing. Hispanic immigration is having effects on this, but a lot of those Hispanics are now Pentecostal, working both ways. So, without black folks here, the South wouldn't be the South as we know it, you know. But it wouldn't just be a hot Midwest. It would still be different, I'm persuaded, but that may be because I come from East Tennessee.
Well, John Sheldon Reed, thanks. I'm sorry we have to stop this conversation. Thanks for your reports on our colleagues down at the University of Mississippi at Oxford and the University of South Carolina at Columbia, and for sharing with us your current thinking about
it. Always enjoy it, DG. Have me back on when I get back from Louisiana.
That's a deal. Okay. Thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.
Everything you need is at Hold Your Own for bathrooms, kitchens, your laundry room, your bedroom, any room. Got a storage problem? Come to Hold Your Own. They've got the best for all of your organization and storage needs, from home decor to auto organization. So simplify your life. Go to Hold Your Own today. Hold Your Own Organizing and Storage Solutions. Hold Your Own in Eastgate Shopping Center.
News Talk 1360 WCHL presents The Art Spot. It's your connection to what's happening in the arts right here in our Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County community. The Art Spot, featuring guests who live and breathe the arts every day. The people who make it happen with ideas to make it even better. Your hosts for The Art Spot on WCHL, Executive Director of the Arts Center in Carrboro, John Wilner.
The Art Spot with John Wilner, Sundays at 12:30, only on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
All day and all night, make News Talk 1360 WCHL your listening post for breaking news, and be in touch with the town and the world. At home, at work, in the car, News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Chapel Hill Carboro's News Talk and Tar Heel Station.